Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and architect of the PeopleStack. My guest for this episode is Corinne Walsh. She is founder and lead strategist for Revampologist. Welcome, Corinne.
Thank you, Jen. I'm so excited to be talking to you today.
So am I. So let's get started straight away with the basics, and then we'll peel back the layers and get into some of the more of the juicy stuff. So first, Tell us about Revampologist. This is your company. What kind of help do you provide for your clients? And I'm also curious, just in terms of your career trajectory, what it really means for you to be doing the work that you do.
Those great questions. What I love about, you know, PeopleStack and what you're doing is my company launched about 7 years ago. I would started to take it more seriously as opposed to like a side hustle, where I really wanted to help companies focus on the marriage of people, process, and technology, you know, which is really what you're all about as well. And I found for me as a career move, I wanted to impact more companies, not just the one I was employed within, if that makes sense. I saw a vision for myself of taking all the tools, lessons learned, certifications, you know, just maximizing what I could do within companies as an entrepreneur, and realized I wanted to take it out as an entrepreneur and go and help other companies do the same. So as I've been growing this strategic consulting practice over the years, you know, it's had its moments of evolution, but really for me to feel like I have growth in my own career path, I needed to have more control on where I could take it. And I really wanted to figure out ways that I could impact more people on a broader scale. So, you know, what I enjoy most about it and what I have been able to build with my clients is that I've become a trusted source when they are looking to go through a shift, whether it be delivering a new product or service or thinking about a reorg because they need to align operations for some change that's happening, or unsure about how to hire properly or create an organizational structure. Like, I literally have all this vast knowledge and experience that now I can bring all of it into my client and really help them strategize and focus on what the next steps are, and really continue to build that trust with them so that they can lean on me and the team I bring in of experts to assist them in providing that service.
Got it. So the kind of help that you provide is, would it be accurate to characterize it as organizational change consulting, you know, anything that would be involved in organizational change?
Yeah, I mean, definitely that arena. I would also say growth management. So generally, companies want to change because they're not hitting some sort of goal, or they've been challenged to go into a new market because they want to grow into a new arena, not necessarily sure how to go about doing that. So I started to call myself actually like a growth strategist for a while, because I really felt like there was this consistency of the conversation I've been having and the clients that come to me where they're struggling on either hitting their target market properly. So they're trying to figure out not only how to organize themselves from the people side, so the organizational change, but really like how to align it through process, and also what technology would assist them in doing it in a practical and easy way. So yes, it would be organizational change, but really it's with the undertone of, I would say, growth.
Okay. And you just started to answer my next question. I was going to ask about the tech piece of it. The organizational change, the growth strategy, kind of definitely, I definitely see the people and the process in there. So talk to us a little bit more about how the tech plays in as well in that marriage.
Yeah, of course. So as you know, you really can't do anything much or reach your target audience without some form of technology. Whether you're a tech firm yourself and producing that technology, or, you know, an e-commerce company with product that needs to get out the door and shipped to somebody, It all has technology underlining it. So my view on technology and how I help my clients leverage all the range of tech that's out there today is to figure out what the true need is, who are they trying to service, and then try to find the right tech stack pretty much to come in and align with those strategic goals. So the technical piece, it's like I have never been an engineer. I grew up, I would say, in the .com to the .bomb era. And so I was exposed younger in my career to the value of technology and how now it's like you literally, we're all walking around with these handheld devices, and tech is the baseline to create a foundation of what you're trying to accomplish. What I've seen that I've had to come into certain companies and correct is when they sign up for the wrong tech from an operational standpoint, let's just say in-house, and so that it inhibits them from servicing their client base properly, and realizing that they might need to tailor it down a little bit, or get the right education on that tech to leverage it the right way, or change it, or it's too much of a mammoth, didn't really meet their needs. So now it's time to bring in some more practical products for them to implement so that they can really service their need, but also optimize their operations.
Mm-hmm. What kind of tech are we talking about here? Like, can you give us an example of, like, are you talking about software programs, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it could be anywhere from, so for example, one of my clients that, you know, we just did a brand refresh of. So I'm even talking a simple tech is like the website, and what does the website do, and how does that generate leads, and how does that sell a product, and how does that represent the experience and the culture of that company? You know, it took an integration of multiple products to produce their new site, which had, you know, a back-end CRM tool to it. It had a marketing, you know, like MailChimp, I think it was, to integrate with. It also, you know, they had a certain proprietary software they needed to integrate. So when I talk about this tech, it's literally like the everyday use technology across the different client needs. So in that case, that was a brick and mortar event space that required a brand refresh in order to attract more clients in. They were the second year in the business. They did the best they could as a startup. And then now they needed to grow and scale their technology for the demands of clients coming their way. Then there's in-house tech, right? So the enterprise software, I've gone in and implemented different integrations with Salesforce and brought in expertise around that. And, you know, Salesforce, as much as it's a strong tool out there, it can be so complex with all the add-ons, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can get inundated and say, oh, I need this, I need this, I need this. Well, if you don't have your strategy clear and the direction you're trying to go, then here you are investing in licenses on enterprise-wide software, potentially paying for add-ons, but not using maybe 20% of what it's offering, mm-hmm. right? Like, so there's that also, that need to understand the demand to then leverage the technology properly. Mm-hmm. So it ranges from off-the-shelf product to customization, depending on truly what the need is. And I would say that's my solution skill set, because I've always been that bridge between people, process, and technology. Mm-hmm. I've worked with engineers, you know, to develop amazingly complex customized products, mm-hmm. to, you know, front-end software content management, right? Like it depends on the need, but I would say that's where I have a bit of a fine-tuned skill
cool.
to bring it
that's
all together,
cool.
you know?
That's very cool. That paints a really good picture of what you mean,
okay.
people, process, and tech. Mm-hmm. And I am a huge believer that it's the strategic goals that should really drive the choices of technology and not the other way around. And that, like, so many people are like, oh, I've heard of MailChimp or I've heard of Salesforce or whatever else. We need to use that. Let's mold our business to make it work with Salesforce or MailChimp or whatever else. That's like the complete wrong way to look at it. It's like, what are the goals? What are the strategic goals? And then we figure out, you know, whether it's
the right fit,
getting external stuff, if it's the right fit, or whether there's an internal solution that would work better.
And I can't tell you how many times I've actually gone into certain client sites, and this is maybe not so kosher to say, but I'm going to say it because it's what value I bring. But sometimes in my assessment of contracts that clients have signed with other vendors, especially in the tech space, and been sold something, and the delivery, generally, there was a period of my career where I would come in as the recovery person, right? Because time and time again, promises are made up front and implementation goes awry because there's that misalignment of understanding strategy and the right product fit. So I've had to go in and like renegotiate contracts to get my client what they were promised, or realize that what they were promised was this product did not do, and find the substitute for it, you know? So it's really great that you bring that up, the clarity on strategy first, but also how to vet your vendors for implementation is really important too. And making sure you understand as a client, you know, if you're purchasing an off-the-shelf product or services or tech from another firm, how to make sure you're vetting what they offer and that it is a true fit before you sign any contract to start implementation.
Yeah. Otherwise it just ends up feeling like I interviewed somebody else for the podcast, and the way that he described it was you feel like you're holding a bunch of stuff together with silly string, and that's not how we want to do it. I mean, granted.
No, and it's a waste of time and money. Yeah, that's the worst part.
It really is. I think it's the tricky part is for small businesses like us, where we don't have I don't have the resources to say, invest in like a custom internal solution, or like even for something like Salesforce or Entreport or Infusionsoft or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of working toward that. But like for now, I kind of do have to hold stuff together with silly string a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's like that whatever is in the middle of all that silly string, it needs to be super strong.
So which generally is you.
It's the same.
Right. And that strength is generally you having to learn how those systems work.
Yeah.
And like tie it all together, right? Which then also creates a breaking point when you do start to grow. And that's when you then assess, you know, what else. But you're exactly right. Like there's the different stages of a business growth model of what you leverage. But I you know, the worst case scenario of us seeing this time and time again with top executives, and this is more in the larger firms where they do have the money behind them to go and invest in this tech, and an executive goes to some conference and comes back and says, we have to implement this software because I saw this demo, right? And then because of the way the communication is people-wise in that company, they start to charter against it, and no one's challenging why. Why do we need it? Was that a problem? Did we have that problem?
You know,
so constantly, like millions of dollars get spent on implementing tech because of some, you know, show they went to and saw some demo and saw competitors in that space, and we must have it, right? So that's an interesting tactic too. It's like, how do you empower your teams to challenge when those things happen? Is the other aspect of work that I do. It's that facilitation of communication in-house, you know, to make sure that there's prioritization around change, you know, because that was the other topic you wanted to talk through too. It's like that change, that effervescent change, and like how do you navigate that? And it all comes down to communication, the simplest form, you know, which is the human factor, but it's also process, you know. So it's pretty wild to see when those circumstances happening, not to have the framework in house to challenge change that is maybe unwarranted. And you know.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to talk about change. And I really love in your LinkedIn description how you describe yourself as a catalyst for change. And, you know, there's really a need for that because change is hard. Or the way that I like to think of it is that, you know, non-sustainable change, that's easy. Oh, okay, cool. I can go to the gym once. Oh, you want me to go 3 times a day for the next 5 years? Oh, And so it's the same thing. And so what I'd like to hear you talk a little bit more about is essentially what advice you would give to people, to organizations, to really make that change happen, but also make it be sustainable as well.
Yeah, perfect. I love change. I'm a variety girl. Like if I don't have variety around me, I am not at my best self. Like that is something that I realize about myself. It's in a very interesting situation in a marriage. I'll tell you that right now. but when it comes to work environments and why I call myself a change catalyst is because I have so much comfort with it because I know the end result after change, and I'm using my quotation hands, is a growth or a movement in some direction.
Yeah.
If you are uncomfortable sitting in your so-called comfort zone, I call it the uncomfortable zone. Like literally it's a space that you're like brooding about something else you wish you had, wanted, et cetera, but you're accepting the circumstance.
Yeah.
All changes to me is stretching outside of that and trying something new.
Yeah.
And when making statements like change is hard is because you might be thinking too far in advance and going into like the panic zone of overwhelm that like you really want to you're trying to get to A to Z instead of A to B, right? And taking incremental steps to grow outside of that discomfort zone and getting into more of a stretch zone or growth zone, as I call it.
Yeah.
That aspect, just change in perspective on, you know, that evolution, the next version of, you know, if we're talking to a lot of techies and they understand version control, right? Like if you just kept the same software right now, if you never had to update your iOS, would you be satisfied? And you probably would because you built the habit on that certain like iOS platform, right? Your phone operates a certain way. This is as smart as it gets and you'd probably be comfortable with it, but there are pains with that you've now created a habit around. So the next version shows up in front of you like, oh my God, I didn't even realize I could do this so much better, right? Like it could be so much easier, you know, in certain cases. Some upgrades have epic failures and they need to be written, right? but that change management, that catalyst is literally just creating the space to ideate around what could be done better. What should we be focusing on? What do our clients want? Mm-hmm. What is it that we could do to serve better? How can we have higher impact, right? What is our strategy that we're chartering towards? And what do we have today? Does that meet the need? If not, then what else could we be doing to then navigate change in a strategic direction, not a haphazard direction? And I think that's where most people have the pain is that they could be switching focus often, thinking that they're going after change, but it might not be aligned with the appropriate strategy so that you're all rowing in the same boat together.
Mm.
Does that answer your question? Like it kind of, I know it's all over the place.
It sounds like it in some ways it is, but it's a complex question. I mean, because people have so many different beliefs around what change is and what it means and good, bad, or otherwise. So what it sounds like is like step one, let's shift. If you do think change is hard or I hate change, let's shift the narrative there from that to, well, actually, you're in the uncomfort zone if you're not changing. You're just accepting. You're just settling for where you are right now. And actually, change is life. Growth, that's part of life is growth. And that
exactly.
Don't you want to do better? And that,
or even like, what else would you like it to be? Sometimes it's not about better or worse, because that also can create some overwhelm in the mindset too.
Okay.
I think it's more about what else? Like, is there anything else that you would like to see happen, provide, do, right, produce? And then if that's, so you see how when you talk about like a growth opportunity versus staying the same, there's an energy shift in that. Most people have a desire to grow, They want to connect with other people or other things out there, and then they want to grow into something. And then eventually it drives into impact and contribution. Because once you've mastered growth and you've created, you know, this certainty within yourself, then it's like, well, how else? How else can I go impact the world or my own microcosm or, you know, my client base, whatever that looks like. So it's really about creating that dialogue. Again, what you just said, it's a mindset shift from fear to growth or what else? Just simply asking that question. Well, what else?
You know? And that makes it a lot. I definitely agree there that just asking what else, what more, what more can I do? What more can I provide? How can I grow? How can I serve better? That it is a much different energy, and it's almost less scary than saying, how can I don't remember how I phrased it. How can I change? Right.
Yeah. Daunting.
That's not good.
Well, it also assumes something's wrong. So that's the other part of that, right?
That's true.
Like when you know, when you say, oh, we got to change that. Well, then what's wrong with it? Like that's the defensive, right? Well, what do you mean? Like what's wrong?
Yeah.
And and especially when you're talking with an engineering team who has busted their butt to deliver something awesome.
Yeah.
And they are so committed, and that's their connection. That's their work. That's their art. And then you're like, you know, well, let's change that. wait, like that is like a sword in the heart, right? So you have to have, that's where the communication piece comes in for managing through change. It's really, really about excelling your level of communication and asking the right questions so that you can navigate forward together and not create, you know, animosity or a fear around the shift that might occur next.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, how do you create change without realizing you're creating change? Because it's like when you approach it this way, what else can we do? How can we create a better impact, more of an impact? Then it's like 5 years later, oh, wow, yeah, we did change. But it didn't feel like you were pushed into it or like it was scary or anything. It was just, hey, this just happened through the natural course of focusing on goals.
Alignment. Yes, exactly. Alignment to strategy is key. And then figuring out the practices to continuously check in, you know, and make sure you're on that path. And when you're not, to let things go, as opposed to carrying so much baggage forward when it's not working, you know, and that's the other side of the pain and change for certain arenas is that it is because they're trying to carry all sorts of baggage along with trying to change, you know? So, you know, you use the gym exercise. If I'm going to the gym and I am diligent about working out 5 days a week, but I go home and I down 2 pizzas a night, I am not going and keep that nutrition habit in a bad place, right? Like I'm not going to see the difference in my body and I'm going to feel like crap about it. It's the same thing in any sort of team moving forward to deliver a product, a project, a service. If they're constantly holding on to baggage of bad habits while trying to find the new best, next best thing, it's a recipe for disaster. And that's why change is painful.
So let's move forward because I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about this next topic. This is, so I was excited to talk to you about many, many things, Corinne, but this is the one thing that we've been chatting about before and that I've chatted with many people about that I know some folks are going to get value out of. This is kind of on the subject of change, but slightly changing the subject. Changing the subject on change.
Yeah.
How do we get engineering managers and project managers to finally get along? And the, just to give people some context, perhaps you could also, you could provide a little bit about your career history. You've basically done both. And so, and also I probably don't have to explain to the folks who are engineering managers and project managers who are listening. They're like, oh yeah, there's like this constant battle. But has your, you being someone who has been in both worlds and now is someone who works alongside all of those folks and more, what's the clash here? What's going on? And how can we finally get the tech managers, the engineering managers, and the project managers to get along?
Yeah, so I, you know, when as I grew in my career, when I first did independent project work, it was mainly in the in that realm of project management. And then I And then I realized it's really my skill set was in like delivery management, because I always saw the whole picture. You know, some PMs are trained to be task managers, and some engineers don't want to be tasked. So like if you have a dynamic where you are a task manager and you're constantly coming up on conflict against engineers not wanting to be tasked, that's a problem in the system of facilitating the delivery. So as I grew in my career and I became an agile coach and avid in agile practices, I would even tweak those practices for what's best for my team dynamics. So first and foremost, you know, when I come in and do facilitations or trainings with teams on delivery, and if I see there's a dynamic of project manager to engineering team or whatever that looks like, it really comes down to a lack of communication and understanding of each other's role and responsibility in that delivery realm.
Yeah.
So if you are, and I've worked with a lot of non-co-located teams where I've had to also build that communication structure in order to solve this problem that you're bringing up.
Yeah.
Because I think that everyone would get along if all they have to do was go hang out with each other. But the problem is, generally, is that there's a delivery team that's tasked with something. And then above that, there's a leadership or a management team that's constantly changing priorities, that certain representatives of that change that's occurring isn't getting communicated properly to the team that's actually trying to deliver. So the messenger gets hurt in the process and gets a lot of grief, which is generally the project manager, or sometimes the tech lead, because like I said before, there's a passion behind the creativity that comes in tech delivery.
Yeah.
The engineers do what they do because they love to code, they love to create, they love to put great product out there, and they want to make it useful. That is the underlining tone of every engineer I've ever met and worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And the change of perspective, direction, and without communication, it's almost like you're stunting the brainwaves to react properly in those moments when the direction changes, priority changes, etc. So what I do is I go upfront immediately with these teams, how they're working together. So if I were working with a team of project managers, I would want to understand from them, what do they know about the learning style of each engineer on their team and the best method to communicate with them?
Mm-hmm.
And then I would ask the question, what have you done to communicate with this team you're working with, whether it's an individual or many, on how are you going to resolve conflict when it happens? If you do that upfront and you build the communication path with respect behind it, you won't have these tension problems later. They'll still come up.
Yep.
But now you actually have the tools to manage through it with ease and not always feel like you're on the defensive of why you want to do things a certain way. Because you told me last week I'm supposed to do X, Y, Z, and now you're changing your mind? Like, seriously, right? Like there's that attitude that can show up. Or it's like, what do you mean I produced this product and you're not even going to release it because something changed on the front end, right? How many times has that happened, right? Like, wait, we just worked for months on this and we're not even going live with it. What is that about, you know?
Right.
So how do you create celebration across your team, regardless of ultimate impact? But like, how are you going to come together and celebrate? Because you need that too. You're all working together. You better celebrate together.
Uh-huh.
That will build the bond also. And then really bring that human factor back in, right? It's around the deliverable. That's why you all have come together. But connect as people.
Mm-hmm.
You all have something you're striving for inside work, outside of work.
Mm-hmm.
You all have some relationships going on inside work and outside work, you know, like that bond you in different ways. So just humanize it again, right? And figure out how you build up that language. And that's, honestly, I think that's the value I have brought time and time again to delivery teams where there is that tension. And believe me, I've walked into a lot of tense environments, but I disseminated quickly because I was like, we're all human here. Let's communicate. How's the best way for us to communicate? And it it's like a game changer, because now we all have a home base to go back to, mm-hmm. as to how we respect each other, the commitment we'd make with each other, and the what we're going to do when conflict arises, like how do we break through that?
Yep. So essentially, know the best ways to communicate with your team, with the folks who you're communicating with, and mm-hmm. set that up front. So that's kind of number one. How mm-hmm. are we going to resolve conflict when it happens? It's inevitably going to happen. So have mm-hmm. a plan for that in the beginning. How are we going to resolve mm-hmm. conflict? Create those celebrations. Intentionally do that, because it's a long road. And so we need to be able to celebrate together. And then just bringing the human factor, connecting as humans, connecting as people.
Yeah.
So it sounds like this would be these four things, as a starting point at least, would be great advice both to project managers to get along better with the engineering teams, and also vice versa as well.
Yeah. And I would say also from the engineering side, because it's generally the team that gets tasked, right? Like, unless you're an architect and you're actually designing what's going to happen next, engineers need to also find their voice and ask for what they need. I've seen that also time and time again in this communication. If they can initiate this up front, is to say, you know what, my best efforts for me to work is, you know, if you task me with something, I'm going to need this, like my checkout time. I'm not going to answer IMs. I'm not going to respond to email because I want to get this work done. Or if you know change is coming, this is the best way to present it to me so that I can, you know, like it's again for engineers to also use their voice. Generally, engineers are mainly more in their head because that's their gift. And they can let it out in their fingertips and it shows up in their product, right? The voice is key because the emotions happen in that realm as well. And so I would also encourage that too. It's like creating the space to be heard is really valuable from both ends.
Yeah. But I think particularly, I think you're right that engineers tend to, and engineering managers too, sometimes you tend to be in their heads a little bit too cerebral sometimes, a little bit too, I need to think about this, don't bother me, you know, we need to kind of like take this step by step. And then when it's like, oh wow, you know, you totally just changed the requirements on us after we've been spending, you know, how many weeks or months on this. And so I love the advice of finding your voice. Mm-hmm. That it's that's part of the communication thing. Ask what you need. You know, don't just assume that the project manager or anybody else is going to know how to communicate with you, is going to know how to you know, deliver bad news, good news, otherwise. That becomes extremely important if they're the delivery team. You know, that we're counting mm-hmm. on you to deliver this. As a project manager, I'm the communicator. I'm the messenger here. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we're communicating, but you got to meet me halfway and find that voice because I can't read your mind.
Right. Exactly. And help me understand your methods and needs and how to best support you. Right. Mm-hmm. It's that dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in two shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, are you a tech manager? Is leading your team like herding cats? Are you sick of making stuff up without trusted systems to guide you? Are your days filled with useless, time-sucking meetings? Join my Facebook group with other tech geeks who are coming together to build thriving, high-performing teams who don't need constant handholding. No HR BS, just real stories from real geeks who understand the nuances of being a techie. To join us, go to genbunk.com/Facebook. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview. What advice would you give? And so I normally hear it from the engineers, engineering managers, you know, frankly, complaining about project managers from that side point. And it's from that vantage point. And it's just because that's my world. But so what advice would you have for the engineering manager who says, my PM just doesn't get it. He or she mm-hmm. just doesn't know how to communicate that I've tried, you know, tried, Corinne, to tell this person, I'd really much rather you deliver information this way, or mm-hmm. I'd really much rather you not bother me during this time of day. But yet that person still comes in and does that. It's happened time and time again. I hear it over and over again. So I'm curious what advice you would have for the engineering, for the tech manager in that kind of situation.
Sure. So what comes to mind sometimes, and I've seen this too, is that there could be baggage from a previous PM to engineering manager relationship that could be clouding the clarity on how best to manage things together. So understanding the value of the skill set first, I think, is really important between the two relationships. So if I'm a senior PM and I'm working with a senior, you know, dev lead, right? Mm-hmm. Or dev manager, mm-hmm. I personally create a relationship to better understand that person's way of doing things as a PM, like, well, I'm putting my PM hat on right now, mm-hmm. to then say, okay, if that's the way you do things, let me tell you what I'm held responsible for. Because project managers are not brought in unless they're needed. Yeah. And if they're not needed, then don't have them, right? Like, don't waste their time either. Because it is a highly frustrating role as a PM when you're also trying to organize everybody. It's like herding cats. People used to call me like Mother Hen, right? Because I would have to go and chase down everybody and like coddle over here and go, you know, care over here just to get things done, because everyone has a different skill set. So imagine like putting yourself in the PM shoes of what they are chartered to deliver against, and figure out that communication understanding both ways. Mm-hmm. So when an engineering manager says the PM doesn't get it, it could be because you didn't communicate it properly, and you have to own your part.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So help them get it. Go whiteboard it. You know, project managers, if they're solid in what they do, they have to look at the whole picture and all the pieces that talk to each other. Mm-hmm. Engineering managers sometimes will only focus on what they're responsible for and forget about release management, support, marketing, data analytics, mm-hmm. You know, executive status reports, like so much that a PM is coordinating, that it's not also just about that picture. I've had to go in several times and say, okay, so, and I've whiteboarded in front of engineering leaders and said, okay, I get that you're delivering this part, but can I show you the other boxes that I also have to help coordinate?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you fill the whole whiteboard. Like yours is like 1/8 or 1/16 of the board.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so having that empathy, I think, between the two roles is really important. But it's also, again, building that communication and trust on how to work together. So when an engineering manager, if that's the situation, saying my PM doesn't get it, well, then it sounds like that's an education and communication that would need to happen there.
Yeah. So ownership, empathy, putting yourself in that person's shoes. And then that can really change the narrative too, from this person doesn't know what they're doing. Maybe, mm-hmm. you know what? Maybe objectively they don't, but maybe there's a reason for that, right? Maybe they're like overworked. Maybe they're new at it. Maybe there could be so many things going on, but maybe they're really trying hard and they're just not getting there. So as soon as you could put yourself in their shoes and you can say, how can I help you?
Yeah, and also educate them. So like, for example, when I first started doing tech delivery, I had to get educated on the buffer required for me not to hold certain delivery dates against something that if it went wrong, right? Because like development is development. You're going through test cycles. It takes code. It could be really complex. And so you have to also, as a PM, have an understanding of the process to really then say when, and there were times where engineers would be like, yeah, I can get that in 2 days. But past history showed me, no, it's actually 6, right? Like I would have to put 6 into the plan because of that learning. So it's also figuring out all those nuances and being open to pivot when it's not going in the right direction, but to work together towards the same goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that the education piece, definitely hearing that as well, and but from both sides, but like say for the engineering manager who says the PM is, oh, why do you keep saying it's going to take us 4 days when it's going to take much longer? Educate them. right? That that's part of what your job is to educate them, to say it's not going to take 4 days and here's why. It's going to take 12 days or whatever it ends up being. That's the information that they have to go on is what you give them, because they're not developing. They're not delivering. So they need to have all the information that they can.
The other thing I would look at too is like if engineering leadership could see the PMO project management entity as advocates for their work versus taskmasters, it will alleviate also a lot of strain on things that engineering leadership shouldn't have to think about, so they could focus on engineering and leverage the skill set, the soft skill set, the interpersonal relationship skill set that generally comes with, you know, the PM world.
They are your advocates. They are not taskmasters, even though it feels like that. We're all in this together, folks.
they wouldn't have anything to deliver if they didn't have that team, right?
Absolutely.
Like, then they're just advocates to help you make it happen.
Yep. So great. All right, let's move on to the last question then, Corinne. This is a question that I ask all of my podcast guests, and that is, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
So the people-related challenge, I would say, is clarity. That's the word that came to mind when I saw this question, or just like, you know, was thinking about it. I was like, it's when they're not clear on where they're trying to go, what service they're trying to provide, who they're trying to impact, then it creates a lot of busy work and a lot of a lack of fulfillment in how they're spending their time. Yeah. I'd say that's the biggest people related challenge I see. Is that when there's a lack of clarity, then the actions are misunderstood or misused, or time and money is basically wasted. Mm-hmm. And the end result is a lack of fulfillment. So I like to bring that clarity and come back to a focus. So to make sure that there's that isn't a consistent challenge, because then you're running in a circle pretty much and not feeling like you're growing towards what it is or providing the service you hope to provide.
So you would say that lack of clarity is one of the number one reasons, one of the number one problems that the clients who you serve, that's one of their number one problems is lack of clarity.
Yeah. Where they're headed, like what, you know, and that's why I call myself a growth strategist, because first we have to understand why you're running in the same circle and not feeling productive. Well, I wonder why, right? and then it's like, well, let me help you create a clear line. And the line might be flatlined for a while before we can grow from there, just to create that stability and clarity of where you're trying to go.
I'm curious, so potential clients come to you with, oh, I have a lack of clarity, I need help with this, or do they come to you with other kinds of problems and then you then reveal to them you have a lack of clarity and it's like, oh, wow, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I would say my facilitation during my assessment phase. So whenever a client comes to me, I always go through an assessment phase to truly understand what is needed. Based on what they think is needed or what they originally came to me for, I can then assess and say, well, this is what I'm seeing. Is this what you meant to see happen? You know, like, so there's that phase too. And then from that assessment, I do go into, I would say, my stealth mode in providing clarity as to the direction we want to go. Because I never want a client to come to me and invest in my services, my team, and what we do, unless I know we can have a longstanding, sustainable impact. And so assessment has to come first, and then we clarify how we're going to assist them and make sure that they have buy-in for it to invest in this way.
Yeah, I totally hear you on that. The reason that I ask is one of the things that I find interesting is that, you know, from what I do, you know, being a career coach, is that lack of clarity is definitely something that's keeping people back in their careers.
Correct.
But they may not necessarily realize it. So, you know, for example, I'll have folks who come to me and say that, you know, I'm kind of sort of thinking of moving on and switching jobs and going on the job market, but I'm not really sure. And that's like, that's the problem that they present with. You know, that's kind of their world.
Right.
I'm stuck. You know, how do I get unstuck? And then through asking questions, you actually find out that you really have absolutely no clarity in terms of what you want in your career. So I've always found that interesting.
Exactly,
where it's
right.
like it's one of the bigger problems, but it's if people are sitting there, no, I'm completely clear, but that you often don't realize that until you ask yourself the right questions or have somebody who's been there and can help you with it ask you the right questions.
Well, so, and when that happens to me as in my coaching hat too, because I have a lot of executives that I work with and help them navigate their career or individuals who are trying to move into that leadership role, I totally understand that problem because I get that often. I actually ask the question, well, what's not working right now?
Yeah.
Because if you don't understand why they're thinking to leave because something happened on the job they're in. Or they have an influencer that they're following and they see, like, I want that. Like, or, you know, like, and I'm feeling bad about myself because I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right. In the assessment phase, even in that question of I'm thinking about leaving, not sure how to navigate, I always go straight to the, well, let's talk about what's your vision. What's your ideal situation? What do you think would be fulfilling?
Mm-hmm.
And let's get clarity on that, because if we don't know where you're trying to go on the map, I can't help you get directions to get there.
Exactly.
GPS will be useless to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah.
I often talk to my clients as if, you know, I'm the GPS. You're the engine. You got to go. You got to make it go, and I'll provide you that direction. But if you can't tell me where it is you want to go, or at least in general what that might look like, GPS is useless.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
I'm going to flip this question, not necessarily on its head, but just kind of take a slightly different approach with the biggest people related challenge in your job. So for folks like us, one way to think about that is like, what do we help our clients do? What are the challenges that they're facing? But what I'm curious about is like from your perspective, Corinne, like individually, like I don't know how to phrase this. So,
Go ahead.
Basically like from your own perspective, when you're doing the help, when you're helping clients, when you're serving clients, not necessarily like what problems they're facing that you want to help with, but like what's the challenge that you see in terms of doing a good job and serving them to the best of your ability?
So me related then, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
What's my struggle?
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard for me to think about limitations. So that's a hard question for me to answer because it's because I will always approach anything with how many solutions do I have to that, right? Like I'm literally conditioned. So this is a hard one. So I will say for me personally, what's going on right now in the managing of my business and the growth I see, and because I am always solution oriented, I will constantly have ideation around what's next, even to build my own business. So I'm going to answer it that way, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
I know I need to grow past me and start now to build a solid team that I can train and that I can build up with that bring their expertise to deliver what I know my clients need on a regular basis. So I would say that is my own entity people problem right now is how do I sustain pipeline management, new client growth, doing the strategy work, and then building my own infrastructure and my own team of experts that that walk alongside me and grow with me in order to deliver even more to my client base.
Yeah.
So I'd say I'm at that stage right now. That's my current dilemma, and not to abandon ship. So because I love variety, Right? And I love change and I love new things. My backlog is long. Like I have to literally do backlog grooming on my own ideas of what I need to do and prioritize always so that I can stay along the current strategy while building up the roadmap for what's next. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's that people, when you bring other people to the mix, you know, it slows things down up front. That's like in the agile practices, it takes like 3 sprints at least before you can see what kind of momentum you have.
Yep.
It's the same thing when you're growing a company.
Yep.
And finding the right fit for your team. How do you come together? It slows down first before it can speed up. And that's the hardest part, I would say, you know, running my own entity and having great people that I work with and bring on board, you know, with my clients. But figuring out that sustainability and growth path within my own company is probably the challenge I'm faced with now.
Yeah, being a growth strategist for your own company. You do it for others, but...
And leader, yeah. It's exercising as opposed to just being a service to others.
Yeah.
It's stepping back into a leadership role for my own.
Mm-hmm. Right, being the leader of your own team as opposed to serving others and serving as a coach or a consultant. It's very different.
Mm-hmm.
It's very
it's so
different.
It's a very it's high responsibility and a lot of consistent effort before it becomes a nice, well-oiled machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we more than anyone else know that, and I can totally relate to what you're talking about because I'm not quite there yet. Maybe in the next couple of years, I'll be like, okay, who do I want to start hiring? Who do I want to bring on right now? My team is very small, and I like it that way.
it's controllable.
It's intentional, right? Because leading a team is hard.
It's from going from operating your business to owning your business. Basically, is the shift.
Right.
Yeah.
It means giving a lot up as well, and trusting.
Yeah.
Trust is huge.
I would say, empowering a lot of people and finding the right methods to pivot when it's not going right. that's the skill I try to maintain and master year over year as I put myself in new arenas, you know, and grow. I literally lean on the ability to pivot and change my mind when it's not going in the right direction.
And that has served you well.
Thank you.
Continue to serve you well.
I'm trying to put it all out there.
Absolutely. All right, Corinne, we're just about up on time. It's been absolutely wonderful chatting with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk today.
Thank you so much, Jen. It was a pleasure talking with you today, too.
Okay, thanks.